Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. If you hear any construction or someone drilling into the side of my apartment, don't fret, and I'm sorry, but I can't control it. But we do have a lot to talk about today, so really excited for this podcast episode. The Titans just made their cut down on the roster to 53 players, so we're definitely going to do a deep dive into that. But before that, if we're going to go into chronological order, after the last podcast episode, the Titans played their final preseason game. They ended up squeaking out a win against the Arizona Cardinals, 26-23. Malik Willis got another start, played most of the game until the end where Logan Woodside came in and had a pretty emphatic, emotional touchdown run. Which I was particularly happy for him because it seemed like a really frustrating offseason for him. But it was good for the Titans to come away with a win, even though most of the starters didn't play on the Cardinals side. Some of the Titans starters did play. We saw Robert Woods get some playing time. Treylon Burks scored a touchdown. So overall, it was a good way to finish off the preseason for the Titans. Was there anything that stood out most to you in this game, Will?
I guess it didn't stand out in a strange way, other than it's just weird to see him play so much. But to see Rashad Weaver still playing like so far into the because they can't play Bud Dupree and Harold Landry, so I get that they kind of have to play him. And you know, Ola Daney's in and out, and they had David and any who got cut, but you would think that they would find other people to play. And I don't know if that's just they want him to get as many reps as possible because they want him to be as refined and ready because he's only going to get 15 snaps a game during the regular season because of the guys in front of him. But Weaver's played great. Like each week, I feel like we've talked about how Weaver was the bright spot on a defense with some good players out there most of the time. And it was just a little bit frustrating because I want him to get time, but then I also can't figure out where exactly I'd put him. So that was a little strange to me. But other than that, no. I mean, it was good to see Malik Willis have probably his best preseason game. And you know, it was good to see Robert Woods out there. That was cool for, you know, a couple of plays. So everything was good. And the fact that there wasn't anything big to take away from it just means that there wasn't like a bad injury. So all things went well.
Yeah, I agree about Weaver. It has been kind of weird to see him play so much, I guess, because of the injury last year. They want him to get as many reps as possible. But as we're going to talk about a little later on, the edge group is like kind of thin. I mean, he's their third edge. Like he is the direct backup edge to Bud Dupree and Harold Landry. So if anything would have happened to him, the Titans are kind of not screwed, but their depth at edge would be not great because they have Ola Daney and they just cut David Anenye, who was playing well. I'm sure they'll try to get him on the practice squad, but I don't know if they'll be able to. In terms of Malik Willis, I thought it was very easily his best game. He looked so confident, so much more calm was actually getting the ball out in a decent amount of time, finding his receivers, and really only taking off to run when he really needed to. And it ended up with the longest gain of the preseason, for sure. I don't remember how many yards it was, but he just took off running, and he looked electric. I really liked what I saw from him. I think he improved pretty much in every game. Like, the improvement from game one to game two wasn't too much. He looked a little more sure of himself, but the leap from one to three has been pretty big, in my opinion, and I'm really excited about his future. I did see a lot of people on Twitter, not only Titans fans, some like national media members who aren't really in tune with the Titans, saying that they think Malik Willis is going to start several games for the Titans this year at the expense of Ryan Tannehill, or maybe because the Titans might be so bad that they have to start Malik Willis in some games to see what they have in him. I think that's insane. I think we've all maybe jumped the gun a little bit, but I definitely am intrigued by Malik Willis's talent, his skill set, and his continued improvement that we saw in the preseason. So I think the Titans are pretty set at quarterback, at least for the next couple of years.
Yeah, like, we don't, you know, we can talk about how dumb the idea of Malik Willis is until we're blue in the face. It's just some people just aren't going to watch the Titans closely enough to see that that's not going to happen. But the hard thing is trying to argue that while also trying to be fair to Malik Willis, because like you said, he's grown. Like, he obviously is still not seeing the full field, and they had a couple of weird, it looked like they were calling a ton of screens in the third preseason game, like more than like way more, maybe like six or seven. And there were times where there'd be a screen call and he would just sprint the other way. And I don't know if that's a design thing to pull people towards him. So it's, you know, okay, you have one read here. If the defense flows to you and this guy isn't open, you know, throw it back for a screen. I don't know what that's all about. But they did that a few times, and that was weird to see. But for the most part, like, you know, the pass to Treylon Burks in the first play was way too high. It was like 5 yards above Treylon Burks' head, it looked like. But he went up and got it because Burks is good. And then, you know, he had a connection with Woods. And, you know, Treylon Burks scored a touchdown like on a pretty well-thrown pass to Willis. Like, so you saw the things that you didn't see in other games. And it didn't. You know, in the second game, it felt like the first throw, that glance route that they threw, was so clearly you're holding on to the ball too long. To get people to stop saying that to you, we're going to have you throw directly here, no matter if anybody's open or not. You're going to throw to this spot, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, it's your job to get to that spot by the time he throws it. Like, and they did that, and then they didn't do anything else, and they punted or they turned the ball over or something. It was fine, but, you know, that was clearly the point of emphasis on the first drive in the second game. The third game, it seemed more like, okay, let's go out and try to do a couple of things and then see what works, and we'll kind of go from there. So there was some good and some bad, and there's going to be some of that, but you still got to see, you know, the stepping up in the pocket and stepping to run inside the pocket instead of stepping around the tackles and basically running directly into pressure, which is something that he had trouble with early in the preseason. So, you know, it's impossible to get a good feel for the rookie quarterbacks when, just historically, when you don't have the starting offensive line in and you don't have the starting weapons in. Like, if you put him in there with the starting offensive line and Derrick Henry and all the starting weapons, I'm sure he would look better than he looked. But he would also have to go against, you know, Aaron Donald and TJ Watt. You know, it's like, if you put him in those situations, he's not outrunning TJ Watt to the edge. Like, he's not getting out of an Aaron Donald like sack. Like, he's not breaking that tackle. So it goes a little bit both ways, but you know, next year, you know, see where these guys end up and make your decision. But you've got options now. Like, you're not pigeonholed in anything, because Malik Willis does look like he's going to be an NFL quarterback. Now it's just, how good is he going to be, and how much of the offense can you tailor to him before you have to seriously overhaul the entire thing?
Yeah, I think you likened him to Jake Locker at this point in his development. I think that's kind of what you were getting at. And I do think that that's kind of where he is right now, where he's still a little bit inaccurate and he does miss some pretty easy reads. But he's so athletic, can really do a lot for you with his mobility. And he has that arm talent that's just incredible. But I would say that he makes throws that Jake Locker simply couldn't make. Like some of these like arm platforms that he throws from are incredible. Like, I mean, we haven't really seen that from many Titans quarterbacks in the past. So yeah, it's just definitely exciting. And I look forward to continuing to see how he develops. As for other stuff that happened in this game, there really wasn't too many notable things. The only other thing I'd say is Randy Bullock has looked awesome, man. I know we don't talk about kickers a lot, but he has kind of put me at ease. I've never been a huge fan of his, but he was solid last year and just looked great in the preseason, looked great in this game too. Hit a 51-yarder, I believe it was. So good for him. Good for the Titans, because it's important to nail down those specialist positions. And as we're going to talk about in the roster cut down, they also have a very exciting punter that we saw a little bit of in this last preseason game as well. So we're going to take a quick ad break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about the roster cuts.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back in to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. Now that we're past preseason, today on Tuesday, assuming I get this podcast out on Tuesday night, the Titans have already cut their roster down to 53 players, and I'm just going to list off the players that got cut today. I think a couple of them might have gotten cut. I don't know, actually. Officially, these are the players that were cut today. Logan Woodside, Des Fitzpatrick, Mason Kinsey, Reggie Roberson, Laurel Murchison, Chris Jackson, Theo Jackson, Trenton Cannon, Cody Hollister, Brett Kern, Joe Jones, Greg Maben, Xavier Newman, Jordan Roos, Andrew Rupchik, Christian Delaro, Thomas Odukoya, David Wells, Sam, I can't say his last name, Akuyinonu. That nailed it. Jordan Peavy, Jack Givens, David Anenny, Trace Swilling, Adrian Colbert, Tyree Gillespie, Hayden Howerton, Jalen McKenzie, Willie Wright, and Tommy Hudson was waived injured. That was a lot to process. So, Will, I want you to tell me who was for you the most surprising cut or various cuts from this roster cutdown.
Yeah, David Anenny was weird to me because I don't know what more he could have done. Like, he was fantastic. I think he had, like, a strip sack in every game that he was in during the preseason. Like, and at least contributed to a sack or, you know, had half a sack. He was great. Like, I'm very surprised he didn't make it. It was also strange to see Trey Avery make it just because I never watched him and said, man, that was a really good play. Like, Greg Maben at least had, you know, I think he played, I'm 99.9% sure he was on the roster when they played the Kansas City Chiefs in the regular season last year and beat them like 27-3 and like shut out Mahomes. And the only time they put up points is when they put Chad Henne in at quarterback after they took Mahomes out. Like, how much of that was on the front, I don't know. But he, at the very least, was good enough not to get killed behind, you know, not to give any easy opportunities up to Patrick Mahomes, which is something most corners can't do. So that was slightly surprising. It was good to see Kalu make it, just because I think Kalu is very much the safety version of Will Compton, where, you know, if you have to put him in a game, as long as you're not expecting too much, you'll be pleasantly surprised. And they give you stuff on special teams, and they just seem to have a lot of energy, like, you know, but both of those guys just stand out in that way. Other than that, like, just big picture roster composition stuff, I don't remember the last time I saw this many rookies in a class make it to the 53-man roster. Like, I think there's, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's 11 rookies on the roster right now, which is pretty crazy. Like,
and Theo Jackson had a chance to make it. I was honestly a little surprised he didn't.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I think if they don't pick up Lonnie Johnson, who looked really good and who, you know, wasn't hurt, and that's what hurt Theo Jackson, is he played a good game one, missed game two and all the joint practices, and then came back week three and just couldn't really do enough to pull himself away from the pack. But yeah, I mean, Nicholas Petit-Frere looks like he's starting. Kyle Phillips and Treylon Burks will start, whether they're technically starters or whether they just play a lot in key moments. That's up to the coaches and what personnel they use. Chigakonkwo will play a lot. You know, Malik Willis was always a guy who was going to sit on the bench this year, but I think him pushing out Woodside is enough to say that he's exceeded expectations. Haskins looked good as a receiving back who can also run really physical. I mean, he's a physical runner by nature, but he showed that he could, you know, go out there and catch difficult passes and do it on the sideline and do it full speed and make plays. They kept Chestnut as an undrafted free agent, which was, that was surprising to me because it was the fifth, you know, if you include Torrey Carter as a running back, quote unquote, that would be, Chestnut would have been their fifth running back, which is a lot of running. I mean, to have as many running backs as you have wide receivers is weird. Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the main takeaway, is how young this roster has gotten quickly.
Yeah, I don't think there were too many surprising cuts. I guess Kern would be, like, the biggest one for a casual fan. But as Titans fans who have seen Ryan Stonehouse punt this preseason, they kind of had to do it. He was just too good. He has a cannon for a leg and was even pinning teams within the 20s, which a lot of these punters with huge legs tend not to do. They're not as refined as someone like Brett Kern, and I don't think Stonehouse is as refined yet, but I definitely think he has the talent to be. So it wasn't necessarily surprising to see Kern get cut. I'm sure he's going to find a team real quick. I think he's already talked to the Buffalo Bills, so it wouldn't surprise me to see him sign on very quickly. I was, I guess, a little surprised about Theo Jackson, but after reading some tweets from some Titans analysts that I respect, it turns out that he really wasn't doing all that well and didn't play particularly well in the Cardinals game. I don't really remember. I didn't watch it too in depth, but I thought he was doing fine, at least in the first two games. So that was not surprising, but I kind of did think he was going to make the team, at least over someone like A.J. Moore. But yeah, like you said, Lonnie Johnson coming in, playing well. Kalu coming in and immediately playing well. Plus, he's familiar with the team and is such a good special teams player. I guess the writing was kind of on the wall for Theo Jackson. Then Des Fitzpatrick getting cut. not surprising, really. He just has not done anything to warrant a roster spot. Unfortunately, that definitely seems like John Robinson, one of John Robinson's worst picks, obviously after Isaiah Wilson. But I don't want to mention that guy's name too much. But yeah, really not too many other surprising cuts. So what I want to do now is kind of go through all of the Titans position groups, name off the players that are in each position group, and we could kind of talk through whether we're confident in it and whether you think they might add someone else. So let's start off with quarterback. There they have Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. Not too much of a surprise that they're keeping two after Malik Willis's preseason. I think obviously before the preseason started, we would have said that Logan Woodside was going to be ahead of Malik Willis and that he was going to be on the roster. But man, Woodside looked rough in the preseason. Willis looked good. So it kind of made sense for the Titans to just keep two.
Yeah, I mean, that's the position where one player really seemed to matter because it told you what they thought about Malik Willis. So I'm not surprised that they kept two, but it's a positive development, and I don't see any reason for them to add anybody there.
On to running back, they have five, if you include Torrey Carter, who's a fullback. They have Derrick Henry, Dontrell Hilliard, Hassan Haskins, Julius Chestnut, and Torrey Carter. You talked a little bit about Chestnut. Yeah, that surprised me. I know everyone was really excited about his preseason. I thought it was okay. Like, people are acting like he was incredible. I mean, he averaged 4 yards a carry. I know it's preseason and he's playing against not great offensive linemen, and he had a couple of big runs. But I don't know. I thought he was just fine, and he also did lose a fumble in the first game, although it did bounce back well from that. But I even saw someone say that he's an elite athlete. He ran like a 4.61 40-yard dash. His speed and burst scores weren't necessarily impressive. So I don't know. This was a little surprising to me. I don't know that the Titans really need to keep that many running backs unless Derrick Henry is slow to recover from his injury. But by all accounts, that doesn't seem to be the case. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think about? Do you think they're going to end up with four running backs for the whole season, or is this maybe like a Mekhi Sargent type of situation?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. They kind of do this a lot, like Mekhi Sargent, and then they did it with Daylon Dawkins a few years ago too, where it's like you have him on the roster week one, and then basically it seems like they want to have a running back on the practice squad who's familiar with the team, and then by keeping him on the roster now, other teams claim everybody, you know, on Tuesday or on Wednesday, so there'll be a big flurry of claims, and everybody will say, you know, okay, I'm comfortable with this, and then the Titans can claim who they want and then cut Chestnut, who might have gotten claimed but who probably won't get claimed if there's other people on the waiver wire that can be picked up. So that seems like his destiny to me. Like I don't see anything about him that says NFL player. Like, you know, I don't, we've seen so many different running backs come through and look better than he has. And that's not anything bad against him. It's just, it's really easy to look good in the preseason. You know, if you're a running back, like if you can break one tackle, like Darrington Evans, I think he played like 10 snaps in the preseason and he looked good enough to where everybody was like, yeah, if he can just get healthy, like, you know, he can be a player. So it's easy to look the part before everybody gets up to speed and gets used to full tackling and all that. So I don't see a future for Chestnut.
Yeah. And I think some of these other guys that we're going to talk about within the next couple of minutes, like, I don't think they're even going to stick on a team. I think the Titans are really going to churn the bottom of that roster because there's going to be moves to be made, especially when you consider some of these players that they kept, which were kind of surprises. But anyway, let's move on to receivers. They kept five here: Robert Woods, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Treylon Burks, Racy McMath, and Kyle Phillips. Will, as you pointed out to me before the podcast, Racy McMath appears that he's going to be placed on IR, which would have him out for 4 weeks. That's per a report from Terry McCormick. So the Titans essentially have four receivers to open the season. They're going to make a move here, right?
I cannot imagine a world where they don't. Like, so there's, you can look at the, I'm kind of all over the place here because there's a couple of different points that I want to hit. You can look at the running backs and say, okay, you can make this work in your head because you've got Derrick Henry as your starter, Dontrell Hilliard as your third down back, Haskins can be your backup for both of those guys, and Chestnut can be a scratch, and Torrey Carter can be a tight end and a wide receiver. And we'll get to tight end in a second. But they kind of go hand in hand. So I'm just going to go ahead and touch on tight end because you could argue that, okay, if the Titans had kept four tight ends, that then they would be up to nine quote-unquote pass catchers who could all be active on game day and who could give you some versatility. Like Austin Hooper and Chig can both line up in the slot. Like they've done it in the past. Like I'm not sure how much Chig lined up in the slot at Maryland, but I know he played a lot of wing and like offset tight end and stuff. So he can move around. Hooper in his Pro Bowl years played 50% of his snaps off the line of scrimmage and 50% in line. So, you know, that he's as versatile as it gets, even though he's not necessarily a dynamic athlete. So you can say, okay, they're kind of wide receivers, you know, if you want to squint and look at it that way. But they're thin at both places, and that was before McMath got put on IR. So now you've got seven pass catchers if you put McMath on IR. And even for the Titans, that's just not enough. So I don't know in what world they're not adding somebody. It wouldn't surprise me if they added two people, especially if they added one tight end and one wide receiver, just because, I mean, I don't understand how they can, unless they're just like, we're going to have everybody active and that's just how we're going to roll the dice. But I think they felt comfortable that their guys would have cleared, you know, the Hollisters and the, Mason Kinsey's, and they thought those guys were going to clear the waiver wire and end up on the practice squad if they wanted them, which is probably true. So they didn't see the need to keep any of those guys, but they're going to be hitting the waiver wire pretty hard. But I don't, like, why don't you make a trade for a wide receiver with one of these wide receivers that's rumored to be like on the trading block, or who, you know, some of them they got cut today, because it's going to be really hard for, you know, a good wide receiver, even a good wide receiver four or five type, to make it all the way down to where the Titans are in the waiver order. So I don't really understand the strategy here, except like you said, where there's something else in play. We just hadn't seen it yet, or we haven't seen it yet. So that's all I can think. So the short answer to your question is yes, something has to be in the mix. But the long answer is, if there's not something in the mix, I just don't understand how they can field a team with that little number of pass catchers. It just doesn't make sense to me.
I mean, if they do, if they don't make moves, then we might be seeing like a 1950s type of offense, because they might just give Derrick Henry the ball 300 times and then they give, you know, Haskins and Chestnut like a bunch of other carries because they're power backs. And maybe they just don't want to throw the ball. Like, maybe that might be a possibility, but I don't think that would be the correct way to attack it. But if they don't make a move at receiver, like, that's the only plausible explanation in my mind. I do think it's good news on Treylon Burks that they're only keeping five receivers for the moment, four if McMath goes on IR. I think it's a good vote of confidence for him, and I think we can all kind of stop panicking about him, even though we did after that touchdown in the last game. So moving on to tight ends, they're keeping three here. Austin Hooper, Jeff Swaim, Chigakonkwo. Don't really think there's anything more to talk about there.
No, that's a good top three. Like if Swaim is your third best tight end, you're probably in a good spot. You know, he's never going to be great. He's probably never even going to be good, but he was serviceable in 2020, and people tend to forget that because he didn't get anywhere near like where he should have been last year if he was supposed to be the tight end one. But if he's your tight end three, that's fine. Like you can figure that out a little bit. But yeah, I like Chig a lot. I think he kind of got the raw end of the deal, and we talk about Burks and Phillips not getting enough targets, but all of Chig's targets in the preseason were catch this and get ready to die. Like, I mean, it was just, I hope you're not afraid of linebackers because, you know, whether it was Woodside
and the touchdown he caught was at like 100 miles an hour on the pass from Willis. He almost took his head off.
It's just like, it's like here, you're going to get no touch. You're going to get a lot of like I think he was one of the only targets in the intermediate part of the field. Like, him and that one Treylon Burks touchdown, like, and then there was some stuff he did like out of the pocket. Like, he did a lot of good stuff, but it doesn't show up on tape because it's hard if you're not in sync with the offense and you're not hitting guys in stride. It's hard to get a tight end yards after catch because you throw it to them, and if you're late, they've kind of already stopped their feet and they're trying to outrun linebackers and safeties flat-footed, and that's just really hard for tight ends to do. So I think he'll do a lot more in the regular season, so I'm looking forward to that. But I think this group's really good.
Yeah, I love the way Chig moves. He's just so smooth in all of his movements. I think he's going to be a really nice addition to the offense. Moving on, we have the interior offensive line. No surprises here. Ben Jones and Corey Levin are listed as the centers. Then at guard, we have Aaron Brewer, Nate Davis, and Jamarco Jones. Will, you're obviously super excited about Corey Levin making the team.
Yeah, he's good. Like, good. You know, it's weird to see Daniel Munyer on the field and nobody lose their mind, because the difference between Corey Levin and Daniel Munyer is a Grand Canyon sized chasm. And the only reason why we didn't talk about Corey Levin at all this preseason is because he was never the guy getting beaten for a sack or anything like that. Like, it sucks that Munyer got hurt, but it's better for everybody else that there's a different center there.
Yeah, Corey Levin's just solid. Honestly, he could probably be the starting left guard if they actually wanted to make him I don't think he would ever be the issue on the offensive line, which is really good. And it's also good to have a backup like that. It's important because injuries do happen.
Yeah.
And moving on to – go ahead.
I was going to say, neither one of us are saying anything bad about Brewer, because, I mean, I know that – we've talked about it before that Brewer's looked good when he's been put in before, and he's much quicker than Levin for sure. But that's one of those scenarios where if Ben Jones gets hurt and they decide, okay, we're more comfortable, it helps everybody if we put Levin at left guard and if we put Brewer back at center for some snap, like that, I think they'd be just as comfortable with that. Like, and that kind of gives them more size there if that's what they want. But that's the guy who should have been competing with Aaron Brewer. They shouldn't have brought in Jamarco Jones, especially now that he's been injured the entire training camp.
Yeah, although it seems like they're trying to turn Dylan Radunz into a left guard, but that might be a discussion for another time. Anyway, moving on to tackles, Radunz is there, obviously, Taylor Luan, Nicholas Petit-Frere, who John Robinson confirmed is the starting right tackle. He confirmed it on the broadcast. And then Dennis Daly, who was brought in a trade with the Ravens, I believe it was. I'm actually Panthers. Not totally – oh, it was the Panthers. Okay. Yeah. Love to get the Carolina Panthers backup tackle. But actually, they do have good tackles. Taylor now, Matone.
Yeah, now that they because they drafted Ike Ekwonu.
Ekwonu, yeah.
Yeah. And he's fine. Like, if you see Dennis Daly on the field, you're in trouble. Like, that's not like, he's not, there's no scenario where
Kendall Lamb season.
Yeah, but like worse. Like, I mean, like Bobby Hart kind of. Like, He's not as bad as Bobby Hart. Bobby Hart just always looked like a guy who was from, like, what was it, Bishop Gorman or whatever, where it was like That may not be it. What was the fake school?
Bishop Sycamore. Sycamore.
Yes, thank you. Bishop Sycamore, like where it's just the BS high school. Where like he looks like one of those guys where they're just like, yeah, this kid's got offers to Alabama and blah blah blah. And you look and it's just like a 30-year-old guy out there. And it's like, it looks fine if he's going against high schoolers, but when you put him against Aaron Donald, it looks like what you would think would happen. So that's kind of what Bobby Hart is, but he's probably a step above that. But I mean, I've talked about this enough, but if they play him over Raidens at tackle because they want Raidens to learn guard, then the deal is they've just always wanted Raidens to be a guard. Like, I don't know why they even played him at tackle this year, if that's a guy, because he's genuinely, like, Daly's genuinely pretty bad. Like, I don't know what the deal is there. Maybe Keith Carter loved him coming out or something. I don't know, but I don't know. I don't know what their offensive line evaluation has been pretty piss poor for a long time now, where it's just, you look at the last, like, they had Nate Davis and Jack Conklin early. Awesome. Then since then, it's been Isaiah Wilson, Dylan Raidens, who they can't figure out as a tackle, not a guard. Then they've had there's somebody else that I'm blanking. Oh, no, Nicholas Petitfrere is good. That's what I was gonna say. Is like, and then they kind of reestablished themselves when they got Nicholas Petitfrere. But there was like a 3-year gap in there where they kind of lost their mind and forgot what they were looking for in offensive linemen. But
they also started David Quesenberry instead of just bringing back Dennis Kelly if they didn't feel comfortable with Raidens. So there was that also.
Yeah, like they've been very strange, and I don't. It looks like they want to have all guards. Like, they want to have 320-pound wide body guys who can't necessarily get to the second level. Like, that's kind of what the majority of the pieces they've brought in are. Like, they really don't, you know, for a team that has Dylan Raidens and Aaron Brewer and Taylor Lewan and a bunch of those other guys, like, they don't really value athleticism. I can't understand. They really like Tyler Smith coming out of the draft, which, you know, the rumor was that if he would have fallen, that he would have been their second first-round pick, the Cowboys loved him and got him or whatever and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, he's also very similar, where it's like wide body, good run blocker. You know, you can play him at tackle or guard or whatever, but he's kind of the same guy. Like, don't let somebody get on the edge or he'll hold. And, you know, I don't know why they want that body type, even though it's usually the body type that loses. It's usually the Jamarco Joneses and those types of bodies that lose in these camp battles. But for whatever reason, that's kind of the way they go. So we'll see how that works out for him. The good news is Nicholas Petitfrere looks good. And he's always been a good right tackle prospect. So it's good. If you're going to play him at right tackle this year and next year, you might as well go ahead and start him now.
Yeah. I'm not an O-line expert in any way, and I don't know if Raidens can actually translate to left guard, but on a couple of those plays in the game against the Cardinals, I thought he looked pretty good pulling and just getting out in space. He's a really athletic guy, so maybe he can make that transition, but we'll see. Moving on to the defense, the Titans are keeping, for now, 7 defensive linemen: Jeffrey Simmons, Denico Autry, Naquan Jones, DeMarcus Walker, Kevin Strong, and Deshaun Hand. I think the only real surprising one here is Kevin Strong. DeMarcus Walker and Deshaun Hand had really good preseasons. Naquan Jones was great last year and kind of continued that in the preseason as well. But Kevin Strong, I told Will before the pod, like, I've never seen this guy play. I legitimately never noticed him in any of the games. It turns out he's number 97, so I kind of maybe saw him at some point. But I don't know. Weird one there. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets waived within the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, he played 3 snaps in the second preseason game, and then I think somebody commented on him in a press conference and said, you know, he looked good out there. And then Mike Vrabel said, well, he was barely out there, so I don't know how good of a look we could have gotten. And then he didn't play the next week. I thought he was cut for sure, just because that sounds like a very Vrabel disappointed, I'm going to cut that guy, like I'm done messing with him. But I mean, apparently not. So we'll see if he makes another practice squad or if they keep him and cut Hand or whatever they do. But it's very strange.
Yeah, I mean, he's 26 years old. I didn't understand this one. But like I said before, they're going to churn the bottom of this roster for the first couple of weeks. I really wouldn't expect any of these bottom of the roster guys to stick for very long. But anyway, moving forward to linebackers. Well, not really. I hate it when they list edges as linebackers. So the edges are Bud Dupree, Harold Landry, Rashad Weaver, and Ola Adeniyi. For now, they're keeping four. I thought they would keep five. I thought Adeniyi was going to make the team. I don't think Adeniyi is bad, but I almost would have rather kept Adeniyi over Adeniyi. What do you think?
I don't know. Like, Ola Adeniyi, like, pretty much whenever he was on the field, like, you could see, like, there was a couple of plays that he made that were really good in the preseason, and he just didn't play as much as Weaver, which is why I think we didn't get to see him as much. Like, we didn't see as many, like, big plays. But I think every, you know, I don't know if it's every year or whatever, but every now and then there's somebody on the team that Vrabel just sees himself in. And I think he sees himself in Ola, like a guy who started on special teams in Pittsburgh and worked his way into a defensive role. Like, I mean, that's what happened with Vrabel. So, you know, even down to the team. So I think they share a kinship, and I think they like Ola Danny's like personality, like, anytime you hear him talk, I mean, it's just like I really enjoy him as a person. So, and I'm not even around him, so I imagine having him in the locker room and being around him all the time, and, you know, being a guy who will die on special teams and then give you a third down pass rush, like, that's going to endear him to Vrabel. So I don't think they would ever move on from him. But, you know, there's nothing that says that Adeniyi couldn't be that guy, and he may be that guy for somebody else. Like, he may get, you know, picked up by the Jaguars and spend a year as a special teams guy there, and then next year he goes to the Vikings and, you know, has a, you know, a 6-year career as a pass rush. Like, I mean, he's got the tools and he looks good. Like, I don't know what they saw that they didn't like about him, but I mean, they liked him enough to pay him as their highest undrafted free agent in that class, and then he didn't make the team. So I'm not sure on the decision there, but if he's not on the practice squad, it should be because somebody else claimed him.
Yeah, I think that's what's weird, that they gave him all that guaranteed money as an undrafted free agent. He gets like 3 sacks in the preseason, does everything right, and then still doesn't make the team. So it seems like he'd never had much of a chance anyway, but I don't know. That's weird. Hopefully they can get him back on the practice squad. I don't think so. I think his performance in the preseason will have a team at least scoop him up off waivers. But we'll see what happens there. Now on to inside linebackers. We have Zach Cunningham, David Long Jr., Dylan Cole, and Chance Campbell. Jack Gibbons misses out. And then we also have Monty Rice, who's starting the season on PUP. I don't think any surprises here. Dylan Cole's a special teamer, so he was probably always going to make the team. Campbell improved after the first preseason game and just ended up beating out Jack Gibbons in that competition.
Yeah, pretty straightforward. I mean, we know pretty much everything about the guys involved here because they were all here last year except for Campbell, and we got to see him a lot. And like you said, it was rough in week one when he had to go against the heavy 2 tight end set in Baltimore, but against the more traditional NFL team, like NFL offense in Tampa Bay, and against the spread offense and the Cardinals, like, it, you know, he did well enough. So yeah, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have kept him. So that all checks. People like Gibbons a lot. I don't think there was any difference between Gibbons and Campbell. Like, in Campbell, you've already got on a rookie contract, so you know, he should be the guy you keep. So that's a smart move to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think Campbell even gives you more upside for the future. I think he just has more tools to work with. As for cornerbacks, the Titans are keeping six for now: Christian Fulton, Caleb Farley, Roger McCreary, Elijah Molden, Ugo Amadi, who they traded for, and Trey Avery. You talked a little bit about Trey Avery earlier. That was kind of a surprise. I have a funny kind of story about this. I remember I was watching the first preseason game, and I wrote to you and Luke in our Twitter group chat. Number 23 is really fast because he had a great kickoff return. I thought it was Trey Avery. It wasn't. It was Trenton Cannon, because both of them were 23. So I really don't have any positive feelings or vibes about Trey Avery. So that was a little bit of a weird one. I think Amadi was almost a lock to make the team because they traded for him, but I don't know if these guys are going to last very long either.
Yeah, like Avery is another weird one that Avery, Strong, and Chestnut are probably the guys that I'm just not confused, but I look at it and I'm like, one of these things is not like the other. Like, these guys are not as good as the other guys. So, you know, like that, whether they get replaced or whether they're game day scratches or whether there's some hyper specific niche that they have that they want to use them in, okay. But hopefully we don't have to ever learn their numbers because they're never on the field a lot. I think Amadi will be fine. Like, I don't know. I think they wanted somebody who could play in the slot, but they didn't have that in Theo Jackson, just because they've got Elijah Molden, which is good, but I think there's a chance that they're going to want Roger McCreary to just be the boundary corner. Like, I know right now that with what we've seen is them using McCreary as one boundary, and then as using McCreary as one boundary and then Fulton as the other boundary. Then on in their nickel package, McCreary goes inside in the slot and Caleb Farley comes in as the boundary opposite Fulton. And that's what they've used, but they may not want that. They may want Farley to be the backup, you know, boundary corner, just because the other two are so good, and then have Molden as the slot specialist or whatever. That way they don't have to change and move around and teach a rookie two, you know, different ways to play in that scheme. And the best way to do that is to get another slot corner who knows what to do. But other than that, I don't think we should look too much into him. But like I said, I think that was the driving force behind that trade.
Yep. And then closing out with safety for the defense, they obviously kept Kevin Byard, Monty Hooker, and Lonnie Johnson, Joshua Kalu, and A.J. Moore. A.J. Moore's just a special teamer. Kalu is good on special teams, but showed he could still play safety with a really good preseason. And then Lonnie Johnson just came in and played well. And it seems like they like these safeties who can also play cornerback, because Lonnie Johnson and Kalu are pretty much were cornerbacks and are kind of transitioning to more of a safety role. So definitely interesting there.
Yeah, like people have thought maybe that's what'll happen to Molden at some point. That's, you know, that's what Hooker came into the league. Is that like you said, Lonnie Johnson's that way. Like Chris Jackson was kind of that way, where it looked like they might've been playing him more at safety some. Like that is kind of an archetype that they like. So, I mean, I know Vrabel came in talking about you have to do like specific things well instead of doing a bunch of things, because Malarkey was big on versatility. And so I remember when Vrabel came in, it was like, oh, this guy didn't just want versatility like Malarkey did, because he wants guys who do their job well. And that's true, but we have also kind of fallen back into that. The depth of your roster is, you know, we're going to get guys who the buzzword on them is their versatility. So we'll see how that goes. But this, I mean, anytime you've got, you know, Kevin Byard and Amani Hooker you're fine. Like, you can play around with the guys behind them and do whatever you want with it. Like, that'll be okay. Like, you don't have to press too much on that.
No, they really don't. Man, that safety pairing is just incredible. And then rounding out the team is the long snapper Morgan Cox, kicker Randy Bullock, and punter Ryan Stonehouse, who we talked a little bit about earlier, who's coming in and replacing Kern. So that'll do it for the roster. When we come back from our ad break, we will do a little mini game with over-unders for the upcoming season. So stay tuned after the ad break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. So before we started recording, Will thought it would be a fun idea to take a look at over-unders for each team in the NFL. And then we kind of do a draft and we each pick 10 teams. Right? Is that it, Will, if you want to explain it better than me, since I didn't even know what this was?
So I basically stole this idea, and I've been trying to do it for a few years. I stole this idea from Amir Blumenfeld and the Buckets podcast, which everybody should go listen to. And they have a group of guys that for years have taken the Vegas odds on the over-under right before the season. And there's like a $20 buy-in from everybody, and you draft 10 over whatever it is, and you're basically trying to beat Vegas. So for example, if the Jaguars were listed at an over under of 3 wins, obviously you take the under because it's Jacksonville. And when they go 1-16, you get 2 points because you're 2 better than their projection. So you do that, and then the winner gets the pot, and you know that it gets, you know, to make fun of the other one for a long time. So I've been wanting to do this for a while just because there's so many obviously bad bet. Like, there's so many win-loss totals that look so stupid on the board. And it's good to kind of say, like, okay, I have this as evidence of me being so down or so high on a team before Vegas was. And if you're right, great, you can point back to it. And if you're not, well, then maybe you're wrong. So I've always enjoyed that, and they do it with basketball, and I've always wanted to do something like that with football, and I think this is a very fun idea. So we'll see how it goes. I'm going to let Matias pick first just because if there's one that sticks out to him, I want him to have the chance to get it, and I don't want to go ahead and take that from him since I'm kind of forcing the game on him.
That is very nice of you. I was going to let you go first, but I will gladly take that opportunity. I think the one that sticks out to me the most is the Steelers at 7.5. I mean, they won 9 games last year. They tied one with Ben Roethlisberger, who was just so very clearly out. Apparently, he was calling his own plays, wouldn't even go under center because he didn't want to drop back from there. So Matt Canada had no chance to even call the offense that he actually wanted to. They still have a really solid defense. Mike Tomlin, even though Mike Tomlin is going to be part of my Stop the Nonsense, I still think he's a very good coach. And I can easily see them winning more than, you know, 8 or more games, especially when you consider that they're going to play the Browns twice, I think one time with Jacoby Brissett, I assume. And then, yeah, like I just think they're a really solid team, and I think that's a low number for them.
Yeah, that's a good one. I won't tell you whether I had higher or lower on that because, for the record, if I wanted to take the lower, even if I want to take the under after he had took the over, I can still do that, just so everybody knows, including Matias. To me, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is because I've talked about it forever. The Colts are at 10.5, and it is baffling to me to think that the Colts could win 11 games. I don't think they win double digits. I don't think they get to 500. I think they are destined for an implosion. And when your star linebacker has got back injuries and on PUP, and he's off PUP now, but he hadn't practiced at all during the preseason, and that's a nightmare. And then you've got an old quarterback who, you know, doesn't have a reliable left tackle, and your best player is a guard and a running back. Like, that just spells trouble for me. So I'm going to go ahead and say the under on 10.5 wins for the Colts is my first pick.
Yeah, that's a lofty number. And I did see on BetMGM that they're actually the favorites to win the AFC South. Absolutely classic Colts hype. I also saw an interesting, because like I got the game wrong initially, and I sent you just odds that I thought were interesting to pick. And one of them was the Titans finishing first in the AFC South, Texans finishing second. You get pretty good odds on that, and I don't think it's a terrible bet. Well, but yeah, I don't know. That's for another time to discuss, and possibly another podcast.
Davis Mills looks good. I mean, Davis Mills looks solid. But
yeah, I think the Texans are going to be probably better than most people think. They might be one of my picks here, actually. But before I pick the Texans as one of my picks, possibly, I'm going to go with the over on the Atlanta Falcons. They're at 4.5 wins right now.
That was one of mine.
That's too low. Like, they have to play the Panthers. The Saints are kind of, I don't know, they're switching coaches. Jameis kind of implodes sometimes. And the NFC just isn't very good overall. Arthur Smith, I think, is a smart coach. I think Mariota looked amazing in the preseason. I don't know if that'll carry over to the regular season, but I think he'll be just as good, if not better, as Matt Ryan was last year. Kyle Pitts is set for just a huge season. And I think they're okay. Like, I don't think they're going to win less than – I don't think they're going to win 4 less games. I think that's crazy, especially when you consider it's a 17-game season.
Yeah, and for all the talk about, you know, Arthur Smith not having to worry about his job or anything like that, like, you kind of worry if Ridder doesn't develop a little behind the scenes, and if, you know, Mariota gets hurt and Ridder gets put in there early and you have another bad season, like – you know, no coach is going to, or no owner is going to fire their coach until it comes time to fire their coach. So, you know, that's something that I think they have to be concerned about. So I think they'll be motivated to win more too, and more than people think. Mine is, my next one is the Cincinnati Bengals over 9.5. So they're at 9.5 right now, and I don't think they're in a tough division. I think they've easily got the best quarterback and skill position talent in that division. I mean, maybe they regress, but they've completely retooled their offensive line. I mean, they didn't really lose anybody except for a tight end. Like,
they got Hurst, though. They got Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, that's
who's
right.
Just as good as CJ Uzoma.
Yeah. And they got, Osai, which is their pick from Texas. I think he's back this year after getting hurt last year in camp, and that they're doing some cool stuff with him. And I just don't know why you'd be down on. I don't know if they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but I think they'll be an over 500 team in a pretty mediocre division. So I'm going to take the over for the Bengals at 9.5.
Yeah, they legitimately have only gotten better, and that's after a season where they made the Super Bowl, and after Burrow started the season like still recovering from his ACL tear, and they were going pretty vanilla on offense and kind of easing him in. So yeah, I could definitely see them going over pretty easily there. My next pick, I'm going to stick in the division, actually. I'm going to go under on the Browns at 8.5. This team is – they're not good. I don't – there's nothing redeeming about them, and that's not even when you consider that they paid Deshaun Watson all that money, who's a terrible person. And now Jacoby Brissett is their quarterback. He's so mid. Like, he is so average, even below average, really. I don't think their receivers are all that good after Amari Cooper. I mean, Donovan Peoples-Jones is their number two. David Njoku is a pretty good tight end, and Nick Chubb is obviously a great running back. But what does a great running back really do for you in today's NFL? So I don't see it. I don't think they're going to win a lot of games. I think they're going to be pretty bad. And I'm hoping Baker Mayfield comes in there week one and crushes them like the Titans did a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I also think the vibes are going to be really weird there. Like, it's Cleveland versus the world until you're 1-3. And then it's kind of like Cleveland versus Cleveland. I mean, you know, there's it's great to have the guy you think is your franchise quarterback, but that's a pretty big cloud to loom over your head. And there's got to be some guys in that locker room that don't agree with that decision and who aren't happy. And then they're not going to want to treat him as the savior when he comes back. And, you know, by the time he's missing 11 games, like how much can he do in that? Like, you know, who's healthy? There's so many questions. So that's a really good pick. That was going to be my next one if you didn't pick it, just because I try to convince myself that they're going to be good with Garrett and with those weapons and everything. But I mean, we saw him with Mayfield last year as an average quarterback, and they had Odell and Landry and they couldn't make it work. Like, I don't know why we think it's going to be better with Jacoby Brissett and Cooper, but so I'll go ahead with my next one. My next one is the Bucks under 11.5. I think they're on their backup left guard, I want to say, wherever Stinney was competing for a job. They've lost Ryan Jensen to IR. Then Tristan Wirfs has been injured throughout camp. Godwin, I think, is injured still, like, is still coming back from whatever he was dealing with, which I think might have been torn ACL. You know, Mike Evans is great, but we've seen Mike Evans be great forever, and it hadn't always meant good production for the team. That people forget they don't have Jason Pierre-Paul anymore. Like, it's not like they're still the same, like, aggressive front four that wins a lot and is going to dominate. Like, their defensive backs look like they can be had. They've got Lavonte David, and, you know, it's good to have linebackers, but it's probably that and a run-stuffing defense nose tackle, like, that's not going to do much for you. Then, I don't know, Tom Brady also retired and just missed, like, half of training camp in the middle, and his excuses, everything is fine, don't worry about it. Like, I mean, I'm not saying he's not.
Did you see that? Did you see the press conference where he looked just completely defeated? Yeah. Like, yeah. Is he okay?
Yeah. He, like, everything about him is weird right now. And, like, for a guy who used to never let anybody take his, like, snaps, like, with the first team offense, to, like, basically skipping out of training camp and, you know, dipping after he already retired once. Like, I mean, there's a real chance that this banged up offensive line, that he gets hit a lot early and just doesn't pack it in, but just doesn't quite have the same drive to overcome and win. So I don't know. I've got a feeling this is going to be a pretty disappointing year for the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're so talented that I think they could get – plus the NFC is pretty poor in general. So I think they could get over. But, yeah, the interior offensive line is a serious issue, especially for Brady, who, like, he can't really move. Like, he moves in the pocket, but that's about it. And if he doesn't have perfect protection, it can fall apart pretty easily. So I do think that's a good pick. That's a high number, even though, you know, they're super talented. For my next pick, I'm kind of struggling here because some of these lines are pretty spot on. But I'm going to go ahead and go with the over on the Carolina Panthers at 6.5. I believe in Baker Mayfield. Maybe I'm crazy. I think he's going to be really good on this team. They're not super talented, but they have some interesting pieces. Christian McCaffrey, obviously a stud, and if he stays healthy, he's going to crush. DJ Moore is one of my favorite receivers in the league. Robbie Anderson is still a really good deep threat, and I think he can mesh well with Baker Mayfield. The only thing that kind of worries me is Matt Rhule. I think he's a terrible coach, but I think they're talented enough on both sides of the ball, especially if J.C. Horn comes back and is the stud cornerback that we think he could be. I think they could definitely go over on this. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good pick. Like you said, like the biggest concern to me isn't really the roster they have. It's the coaching. Like, I just don't think
something is up with him, man.
he's almost shocked that he convinced the ownership to come back another year. Like, it all feels weird. And then he kind of like had his plan like after the draft, and he's like, oh, okay, well, why don't we trade for Baker Mayfield? Like, he did, like he expected to be fired. It's a very weird situation there. So this my next pick is sort of counterintuitive to everything we know and all the common sense that we have, but I'm going to take the Patriots under 8.5 because in large part they seem to be splitting their offensive play calls between their special teams coach, Joe Judge. I think he's a special teams coach. Maybe he's got another title now. And Matt Patricia, who was a defensive coordinator,
bro,
who was great, and then a terrible head coach. Yeah, and like Mac Jones has looked fine, I guess is a nice way to put it.
No, he's terrible. He's not good, man. I'm just gonna come out and say it.
It's very weird, and it's like Jonnu's doing good, cool. Hunter Henry's been banged up, but then it's like I don't know what else they have. Like, I don't know how they're going to score a lot of points unless he's basically dragging them there. And then defensively, like they're fine and they'll be well coached. But I mean, the Jets look promising. The Bills, everybody thinks the Bills are going to win the Super Bowl. The Dolphins added a ton of talent. Like it's not just a cakewalk of a division anymore. And I believe they had the second best record. Second best record, surely, in the AFC East, which means they're going to have a pretty difficult schedule over the course of the season. So I'm going to go ahead and just assume that letting a defensive play caller call plays for your second year quarterback after he had Josh McDaniels is going to have a negative impact.
Yeah, I have no idea what they're thinking with Matt Patricia. Like, that guy is just not fit to be a coach, really, but if anything, a defensive coach, and now they're making him an offensive coach, even though like he has no idea how to call play. Like, I don't understand what they're doing. Mac Jones has looked pretty terrible in the preseason when I've seen him. He threw one of the worst interceptions I think I've ever seen, and I don't think he's all that great. Like, he got super overhyped last year, even though the defense was carrying them to most wins, and so was Damian Harris, who scored like 15 touchdowns. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they really fall apart this year. I'm gonna go with some of these 6.5 numbers. I kind of want to go under on. I feel like you're gonna pick the Jaguars, so I'm gonna go for another 6.5 team, the New York Giants.
I almost picked it last time, but it's such a low number. But yeah, go ahead.
It is a low number, and I really like Brian Daboll. I think he's an outstanding play caller, but I am getting just really bad vibes about this team. And I don't know if you've seen any of the reports on Kenny Golladay, who's literally just walking through practice, walking through preseason games. And when the guy you spent $70 million on or whatever it was is doing that, it just sets a really bad example for everyone, really. And then Kadarius Toney is already injured. They just lost Colin Johnson to a torn Achilles. Saquon can never really stay healthy. Their O-line isn't terrible. They did get Evan Neal, but Andrew Thomas is still a work in progress. The interior isn't great. And then on defense, they're fine, but I don't really see any playmakers here except for, you know, Leonard Williams. Maybe Thibodeau could be that guy, but he's also he coming off a sprained MCL that he just got in the preseason. So, man, I could see this team, again, winning four games, maybe five, but I don't see them getting to seven given everything that's going on with them.
Yeah, like I don't think they win a single game in the NFC East. Like, I think Washington sweeps them. I think Dallas sweeps them. I think Philly sweeps them. Like, I don't know. Like, even their best player, you know, if everything goes right, their best players are Saquon Barkley and Evan Neal. Just in terms of the, I think, the talent level there. And, I mean, I guess Leonard Williams should be in that conversation too. But it's like, I mean, okay, but Daniel Jones is going to fumble the ball or throw an interception 1.5 times a game. Like, are they, you know, the games they win are like 14-point game. Like, I don't think a change in coaching is going to fix that instantly, especially with a guy who, the you know, you're going from having Josh Allen as your quarterback who can, you know, run headfirst into a linebacker and you never have to worry about the ball. I mean, there's a chance that I blanked on the quarterback's name after I just said it, that Daniel Jones could just sneeze too hard and, like, fumble the ball. Like, I mean, he's awful. So, yeah, that's a really good pick. That, man, I was going to pick that one next. Okay. I'll go ultra negative with my next pick and say the San Francisco 49ers. They're at 10.5, and I'm going to go under that because the Jimmy Garoppolo news that they're not trading Jimmy Garoppolo wouldn't have bumped me, except that every beat writer or people that have watched say, oh, that's not good for Trey Lance.
Everyone, every single one.
Like, that's not what you want to hear. So it, like, Trey Lance will still be the starter, I think, but the fact that they felt so worried about his confidence level that they were like, oh no, well, this is going to really hinder him. It's like, he's like, people cheered Trey Lance from the background for an entire year when Jimmy Garoppolo was fine and they did great. It's like, is there a reason why he's not going to be able to work with Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel and all them? And so it's like, that's a weird situation too. And it's not that they're bad. It's just that it's hard to play the Rams. Like, I think they beat the Rams every time or whatever, but there's a weird thing, like a weird kind of like worst beats best rock, paper, scissors thing there where it's like, I think they always lose to the Cardinals or something weird like that. And then they've got to play Seattle, which is obviously bad, but it's a hard place to play. Like, even your bad teams are in a hard, like, I don't know. There's a lot to freak me out there and make me want to think that they're going to have a bad season.
Yeah, that one's tough because they were really good towards the end of the season last year and especially in the playoffs. And I do think Trey Lance could be really exciting. But yeah, that dynamic is super weird with Garoppolo. Like, I don't know. I don't know how either of them is going to respond to that. So I think that's a good call. I did mention the Jaguars, and I am going to pick them here. I'm going under. They're getting hyped up again by the national media. I don't know what's going on. Everyone is saying that Trevor Lawrence is going to take a huge leap in his second year. That may be true. But he looked really bad last year. Granted, it was Urban Meyer, and Doug Peterson is a much smarter coach, but I saw enough flaws last year to make me believe that it's going to take a little while for him. I don't think their roster is very talented. They did add a couple of players, but I mean, Christian Kirk is just fine. It's not like they added, you know, an alpha number one receiver. So I don't know. I don't think this team is very talented. And I think they're going to go through some growing pains with a new coach and with Trevor Lawrence in his second year.
Well, like, we don't talk enough about how terrible, well, I mean, we do, about how terrible Trevor Lawrence was. Like, last year, he had an 8-game stretch where he threw one touchdown and 8 interceptions. Like, he threw one touchdown and 8 interceptions. Like,
Urban Meyer, though.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, everybody says, like, if you were behind an NFL line, do you think you could run for 10 yards on 100 carries? I don't know, but I know I could not throw 8 interceptions. I mean, like, I don't know that I'd complete any passes, but I know I wouldn't throw any interceptions. So it's like he can, and we saw it firsthand when he threw 4 in 1.5 against the Titans. Like, and this was, the Titans weren't even doing anything that, like, he threw one of them to Jayon Brown and one of them to Rashawn Evans. Like, I mean, if those guys are picking you off, that's not a, well, you just got out schemed. That's a, you're bad at your job. So yeah, that's one that the number was so low that I was afraid to make all my picks in the AFC South. But, yeah, that one stuck out as one that I might've gambled on. I will stay in the AFC South though, since you took that burden from me, and I'll take the Titans over 8.5. Like,
yeah, I'll take that one at some point.
Yeah. It's like, it seems like such a homer pick that it's, you know, it's always hard to evaluate in these situations when you look at these other teams, and I just can't see a scenario where they win 8 games. I mean, is this the worst roster that the Titans have had since John Robinson's been the general manager? No, like, no. Or is the AFC South stronger than it's been since John Robinson's been the general manager? No. I mean, like, when John Robinson took over the Titans, people forget that the Jaguars were going to the AFC Championship game, that the Texans had Deshaun Watson, and before all his stuff, and the Colts had Andrew Luck. Like, I mean, and he still had a 9-7 season and only had winning seasons. So, you know, and that, you know, and now Derrick Henry is back, and they've, you know, they're deeper than they've been in a long time. They have a veteran quarterback who knows what he's supposed to do. Who, I mean, I mean, y'all know what the Titans are. Like, I can't imagine them winning 8 or fewer games.
I can't either. It hasn't happened with Mike Vrabel, who is literally was the coach of the year last year, with, I would say, a worse roster. Like, the Titans roster has not gotten worse. I think it's gotten better, actually. So yeah, that's an easy pick. I would have picked that one too. My turn to pick. I have a couple of options here. I'm going to go with the under on the Minnesota Vikings. For some reason, they're also getting hyped up. I don't know why. Their GM is kind of, I don't know. I don't think he's very smart. They had a really poor draft, in my opinion. They just cut a bunch of players from the 2021 draft, with Rick Spielman. They're still kind of, you know, going through that, which they haven't drafted well over the last couple of seasons, except for Justin Jefferson, of course. Kirk Cousins is still the quarterback. They have a new coach coming in who theoretically should be better for the offense, but their offense like wasn't awful the last couple of seasons. And I just think Kirk Cousins' ceiling is capped, and they don't have a lot of good pieces on defense. Their defense has really struggled over the past couple of seasons, and they haven't really added too much to it. So I just don't see them getting to 10 wins. I think that's way too lofty. I will say their division isn't terribly difficult, but I mean, I think the Lions are going to be improved, and I think they could give them some pretty tough games in those two. And I don't like the Vikings in general.
Yeah. I don't know many people that can name a bunch of good players on the Vikings without using skill position talent, because it's like their defensive line is not nearly what it used to be. Their offensive line is not nearly what it really barely ever was. Like, people think about the wide receivers and think about Thielen and Jefferson, but it's like, I mean, Kirk Cousins is fine, like you said, but like, fine is not 9.5 wins. Like, fine is 8 wins. Or if you don't have a bunch of surrounding talent on the lines and all that, like, I don't know. Like, I think they just want to be a running team, and I don't think they have a bunch of good run blockers. So I don't know. I think that's a good pick. It's very strange, the outlook on them. All right. I'll go ahead with my next one. So I'm going to pick the Ravens under 10.5. Like, I'm not saying that Lamar Jackson is going to tank this season, but he's out there liking pictures of Miami photoshops of him in a Dolphins uniform. He's like, people are talking about his, you know, the contracts he's been offered, and he's saying, like, that's not what they offered me. He said that if a deal didn't get done by the end of training camp, that he wasn't going to sign a new deal. And it's like, I see him completely going full, like, I'm going to win the MVP for myself, and that if y'all think I'm just a guy who's benefiting from you, and this is a fair argument for him, if he says, you know, you think I'm a guy that's just benefiting from the things that you can do, okay, I'm gonna make my, you know, my box score so high that if you want to replace me, fine, but understand that you better be able to replace this with whoever replaces me, otherwise, you know, everybody's going to say you were wrong and I'm going to go do this for a different team and make you look stupid. And I think he's just going to go into business for himself on a lot of plays. And if they're not going to pay you the money, then go ahead. Like, I mean, I think that's a fine thing to do. But on top of that, I think he's going to have to run a lot more. Like, Ronnie Stanley's back, but I think it's like the first time in like a year he's been able to practice really. And that's good theoretically, but we'll see how he holds up. Like, I think Mark Andrews is one of the most underrated like offensive players in the league, but I'm not impressed by any of their wide receivers. Their defense, I think, is toothless for the most part. Like, I think they have a couple of defensive backs, but that defensive back group is not the young defensive back group that everybody remembers when the Ravens got the one seed. Like, they're getting older and they're just not the same guys. So I think that in a division where the Bengals should win going away, and where you're always going to have to play the Steelers tough just because they always play each other tough, like, I don't know that I can make 11 wins happen in my mind.
I don't either. They seem like a good but not great team, and I think 11 wins is too much for them, especially in the AFC, which is always which is just a stacked division, a stacked conference, really. So we're going to do one more each, as we're running a little long on time in this episode. I'm kind of struggling here. I don't know whether to pick the over on the Dolphins or the over on the Eagles. I know we hate the Eagles because of A.J. Brown and everything, but, oh, man, 10 wins is a lot, though. I'm going to go with the Dolphins. I'm going to go with the over on the Dolphins. I really like what's going on there. They added Tyreek. Jalen Waddle looks like an ascending star. Mike McDaniel has gotten Tua to look really comfortable within his offense already. I like that they brought in Chase Edmonds, and they already have a really strong, stout defense. And the fact that they played the Jets twice, and the Patriots, who they always beat in Miami. And like you said earlier, the Patriots could possibly, you know, fall off a cliff this year. So I think they're in good shape within that division. Obviously, the Bills are probably going to win it, but I could see the Dolphins easily getting to 9 wins or more and making a wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. My two that I'm torn between are the Las Vegas over and the Lions under, because I think everybody forgets that the Lions suck, and they're probably the second worst team in their division, but they, you know, the worst team in their division is the Bears. I mean, like, 7 wins for the Lions would be a great season for them. Like, I don't think the minds are there in their coaching. So I'm going to go ahead and pick that. So I'm going to pick the Lions under 6.5. And I'm going to do that because I think that Dan Campbell is a very fun story of like a rah-rah, like, I'm going to like get the troops hyped up kind of guy. But I don't know. I don't get the vibe from him that I'm like, that's a guy who I want designing the plays. Like, he should, to me, he's kind of like Mike Munchak. Like, it's like, I don't trust, like, if there's great minds around him and he's the leader, okay. Like, I can go with that, but I don't know. And then you've got Jared Goff as the quarterback, who, whether you want to say it or not, you basically got paid to take off of it, the hands of the Rams. Like, you know, they did everything they could to incentivize you and do that. He knows that, you know that, the fans know that. Like, they're looking to the future and they know that he's not the quarterback of the future. Like, you know, Jameson Williams has a torn ACL and he's supposed to come back, and that might be good, but it's going to be hard for him to be anywhere near 100% in terms of speed. Like, I don't know. It does not feel like a team that's going to win very many games next year.
Yeah. I mean, I think they'll be okay, but I don't think they made enough moves to have them with four more wins than last year. Like, they competed in a lot of games last year, but they ended up only winning three of them. So I don't know how much room for improvement there really is there. And you said the Raiders earlier. I just wanted to touch on that division. I did not touch that division because I have no idea. I have no idea what's going to happen in that division. I could see, honestly, any of those teams winning it. I think the Chiefs are probably the best one, but the Chargers are super talented. Justin Herbert is a star. And then the Broncos, who already had a great stable of offensive weapons and a really good defense, just added Russell Wilson. And the Raiders just added Devontae Adams. Like, I have no idea what is going to happen there. And honestly, nothing would surprise me. So I just avoided it completely.
Yeah, that, you know, it was a really tough one to look at because on paper, they're the value play because they've got so many weapons on offense and they've got Max Crosby on defense. It's like, you know, it's like you can find, you know, like you can look at how they played the Chargers and like they beat the Chargers on in a game where it was basically like win or go home, and they beat the Chargers. So, I mean, I don't know, like that it was hard, but yeah, it's like any team that's got to play that schedule, you can't feel comfortable taking the over because you're getting no free games.
Yeah, the Titans play that division this year, don't they? Oh man, I hate that. But anyway, we're gonna go ahead and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. Will, do you want to go first?
Yeah, mine's kind of an oldie but a goodie. Like, it's that somebody said today, and I'm not even gonna look up their name because it's burned in my head. They quote tweeted the Des Fitzpatrick cut, and they were like, "It's official. John Robinson is the new Rustin Webster." And y'all, you don't have to listen to this podcast for a long time to know my feelings on John Robinson and him versus the other talent. But I'll say it again for the record. John Robinson has had a draft where he drafted three All-Pros, and that was his first draft. Then he had a draft where he drafted Jeffrey Simmons, who will be an All-Pro, A.J. Brown, who could be an All-Pro, and then he also drafted Nate Davis, David Long, and Amani Hooker. And he has great draft classes, and then he has okay, solid draft classes. And if you get three, you know, starters and a Pro Bowler in every class, you'll never be out of, I mean, you'll always have a job because that's so far above, you know, what the median is for draft classes, that if you can do that, great. And he's done that and beyond. And, you know, okay, the Des Fitzpatrick, you know, that was a bad pick. Like, we all know that at this point. But at the same time, we're staring at a draft class where he got Treylon Burks, Roger McCreary, Nicholas Petit-Frere, Malik Willis, Kyle Phillips, Chigga Okonkwo. It's not like all these guys who not only look like the most accomplished group of rookies they've had, but also seem like they have more upside than almost any other rookie class has looked like when they've walked through the door. So to be the one seed, first of all, it takes a good team, but to be the one seed and then load up and have more rookies on your team than you've ever had before is a pretty strong indication that you're going in the right direction. But it's so frustrating to me when people do that. But for all the people who are echoing that, or if you're just the vocal minority, just understand that that is an absolutely moronic take, and it will get you blocked or muted on my timeline quick.
Yeah, I think drafting is hard, man. Like, what is the hit rate for any normal general manager, you know? That's not like, what was the guy on the Ozzie Newsome of the Ravens who just crushed every single draft? But that's like, he's like one in a million, you know? Like, go look at Chris Ballard's drafts over the past couple of seasons. How's Kamoko Ture doing, who just got cut by the 49ers, or some of these other guys that he's drafted? Every single general manager, like, is 50-50 at best with drafting actually good players. Like, yeah, John Robinson has had some duds. He's also had some incredible picks. Like, it's okay. It happens to pretty much every GM. If anything, he's above average at drafting.
Yeah. I mean, Ballard traded a first-round pick for Carson Wentz, and then everybody was everybody was falling over themselves backwards to talk about how smart he was to get rid of Carson Wentz the next year. I'm like, it's wild to me. But yeah, that's mine.
And the Fitzpatrick thing, like, yes, that was a terrible pick. I think everyone pretty much agreed with it at the time, and most of us wanted Amon-Ra St. Brown, who for now, it's only been a year, he looks really good, looks really solid. But it was a fourth round pick. It's not like this was a first rounder, like, okay, the Isaiah Wilson thing sucked, but it's not like we traded up to draft this Fitzpatrick in the first round or anything. Like, the fourth round, yes, you can get good players, but most of the time, they're not going to be very good. And unfortunately, Des Fitzpatrick wasn't, but it happens, man. You guys need to relax and realize that it's very much a crapshoot in terms of whether draft picks do well or not. So I'm going to wrap up with my stop the nonsense. I had two. I'm only going to stick with one, though. The other one was like a Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network thing. I don't know if you saw, but Cleveland Browns fans have just been attacking her relentlessly because I don't know. She said something about Baker Mayfield, like being pro Baker Mayfield and wanting him to win in week one, because that's oh my God, why would she cheer against my team? Yeah, your amazing Cleveland Browns team that signed Deshaun Watson. But anyway, I don't want to talk about that. I do want to talk about Mike Tomlin, who I did say was a great coach earlier in this podcast episode, which is true. But in the final preseason game, he made a couple of decisions that I don't know what he was thinking. So he played Deontay Johnson got injured. That was fine on a catch because he was really just playing the first quarter. It happened within the first couple of drives. So that was OK. Like, I don't think there's anything to get mad about him about that. But T.J. Watt and Najee Harris were playing into the second quarter, like late second quarter of the final preseason game. T.J. Watt gets his knee injured, I think it was, or had like a little leg injury. Why would you put the defensive player of the year at risk? He has nothing to learn, literally nothing else to learn. He's an edge. It's not like he has to learn a new scheme or anything. That just made absolutely no sense to me. And the Najee one, like, you just gave this guy 300 touches after drafting him in the first round last year. And then a couple days later, we find out that Najee Harris had a Lisfranc sprain all of training camp for like the past 4 weeks. And you're out here putting him for hits and getting him meaningless touches in the final preseason game. Like, that made absolutely no sense to me. And I don't know. Like, he got a ton of backlash, and I think it's very warranted.
Yeah, like, it's not like he's in his first or second year. Like, he's almost 28 years old. Like, you know, you don't need a guy who's closer to 30 than he is to 24. Like, you don't need that guy out there taking snaps. Like, like you said, he knows what to do. And the problem is how he plays. Like, he plays so downhill, and like, he tries to make so many plays like from the backside that, you know, exactly what happened to him is going to happen to him, where somebody's going to come across formation and hit him low. Like, same thing that happened to Thibodeau. And it's just like, I mean, I don't know how, like, there were warning signs not to do that, and they did it anyway. And, you know, luckily for the Steelers, he wasn't hurt. But yeah, like, the whole, that old school mentality or whatever, like, that's fine. Like, I mean, for some guys it works, but you do have to understand that if you do it for, you know, for 10 years, eventually one of your starters that's important is going to get hurt, and then everybody is going to have all eyes on you. So unless you think it makes a real, like, marked, like, clear difference, don't do it. Like, it's just not worth, like, it's not worth the hassle. It's not worth the headache, and you're not getting the juice for the squeeze.
Yeah, just zero upside to those decisions, particularly the TJ Watt one. Like that one just makes absolutely no sense. But anyway, that's going to do it for us for this episode. We'll be back next week to preview the Titans' first regular season game. That is crazy to think about after what a long summer it's been. But football is finally back, and we'll be here to preview the opener. So for Will, for Matthias, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll remember to always stop the nonsense.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.